This is Self-Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self-Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work.
There's still this weird idea that, like, if you move on too fast from the death of your partner, for instance, people are watching you and they're judging you and they're casting aspersions about how much you really love them. It's just all weird, weird stuff. And I think the older you get and the more removed you are from the loss, the less you care what other people think.
Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. My guest for this episode of Self-Work is Leslie Gray Streeter, a woman I've known, or as she explains to me, is a parasocial friend of mine, since 2019 or 2020. We both had books come out right before the pandemic, and we both knew a woman named Cindy Metzler who introduced us. Leslie's first book was about the death of her husband. It was called Black Widow. It was a wonderful book and was told with such biting truth and gritty humor that I knew I wanted to keep up with her, and I have. I followed her on Instagram and that kind of thing. So who's Leslie Gray Streeter? This is what she says on her website. It says cool stuff about Leslie. She's born in hood-adjacent Baltimore City. She's a columnist for the Baltimore Banner, a University of Maryland College Park graduate, a veteran journalist, and someone always looking for new ways to tell stories, both her own and those in her community. She's also the co-host of Fine Beats and Cheeses, a podcast about pleasures we're guilty about, which she does with her sister, Lynn Streeter Childress. She's loved where she has been and happiest where she is now in her city of Baltimore. She says to send her good cauliflower recipes. But now she's written her first novel, Family and Other Calamities. I've never had a guest on for a second visit, but Leslie warranted it for sure. I hope you'll enjoy our discussion as she, in this book, weaves some of the facts about her real life into a story that I simply didn't want to put down. The book again, Family and Other Calamities. Before we go on, let's hear from BetterHelp. The most common problem I hear from those seeking therapy is how hard it is to find a therapist, how long it takes, how vulnerable you feel asking around for names. BetterHelp solves those problems. After you make the first contact, their standard is to offer names of therapists to you in less than 2 days, and you can talk to them in a first session to see if it's a good fit. If so, you're on your way, but if not, rather than going through something awkward, you simply let BetterHelp know, and they'll ask what it was you didn't like and find someone else for you. You can text, chat, or talk virtually. All of those avenues are open to you. I'm a therapist because I got good therapy. I'd had no idea how much I could benefit from it, but I knew I wasn't seeing myself or my world clearly. Here's BetterHelp's offer for Self-Work listeners. 10% off your first month of sessions if you use this link, betterhelp.com/self-work. You know, they say the best time to plant a tree is 30 years ago, but the next best is today. It's never too late to reach out and get help. BetterHelp.com/self-work. And now, Leslie Gray Streeter. It's been, what, it's been 6 years since you
five years since you and I talked.
Yeah. I mean, I loved your first book, and this one was very different, but similar in a lot of ways, too, because of the theme. So tell people at Self-Work who you are. And
absolutely. My name is Leslie Gray Streeter. I am a lifelong journalist, seems like that way, currently a columnist at the Baltimore Banner in my native Baltimore, Maryland. I am a author. My second book, Family and Other Calamities, came out in June. My first book was a memoir called Black Widow that came out in 2020. I am working on some other stuff as well. I'm a single mom and a slow runner and a person who cares very much about my community and very much about telling stories that I don't think get told as much. And at this point in my life, in my 50s, where I was in my 40s when my husband died 10 years ago this year, which is, you know, being 44 and a young widow, not that young anymore. I feel young, but, you know, I want to keep writing stories about women in middle age who are the focus of the book and not the auntie or the, you know, the wise person who shuffles aside as the pretty people come on. You know?
Yes, the ones who have a special appearance by, but are actually the major characters.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It was obvious, Leslie, you know, you lost your husband years ago and have been a single mom since then. And you're Black and you're a journalist. And, you know, it was really riveting because I read that book and I've kept up with you through the years. I'm always looking at what you're doing on Instagram. And, you know, the similarities, the side by sides were both painful to think about, you know, that this is a life this woman has lived, but at the same time, it made the depth of the story so interesting to me. So what was it like for you to write about a character that was so similar to you?
It's funny. So Dawn, the lead of Family and Other Calamities, is, like me, a Black woman from Baltimore who is a journalist who married a Jewish guy. Those things all true. Everything else is wildly different. She's not a parent. She makes a dumb mistake in her early career and winds up moving to LA to kind of flee it. And because the internet was not yet quite a thing, then she's able to kind of get it under the radar before anybody kind of finds out what happens. I've never had a major story stolen from me. I've never had a friend, as her friend, former friend in the book does, betray her like that. But it was neat to write what I knew.
Yeah.
Also, too, as a journalist, we're not encouraged to make things up. You know, so to write, this is, you know, my first novel, and to be able to make up a story. I was thinking right before I talked to you, before I got on, about this woman that read my columns in at the Palm Beach Post. And when my husband died, I got all kinds of letters and emails. And this woman wrote me and she said, "I was very disappointed by the end of your love story." I was like, "Me too, sister." It was so weird because
he died. Is that what she
died?
Say?
And she was very disappointed. She had been following our story for 5.5 years in the paper. They were dating. They got married. They did this. They did that. And then he dies. And she's like, "Well, that's disappointing." As if it's
she's watched too many Disney movies.
It was weird. I was like, "This is my life, lady." So, and people. That's a whole other conversation about parasocial relationships, which there was not a word for in 2015, but certainly is now. But I remember writing the story going, yes, you can write a thing where the husband still dies, but then all this other stuff happens and there's this weird, wild backstory and like a, you know, R&B diva who for no reason and just all this weird stuff. And I thought, yeah, make it a romp, make it kind of crazy. So it was fun to be able to do that. And also in 10 years, I've healed in a way that I had not when I wrote the first book. Mm-hmm. So the first book came out 5 years after Scott died. And I started writing it right away because I just needed to kind of get those feelings out.
Yeah.
And so beginning to work on this probably 3 years ago, felt cathartic in a different way. It felt cathartic from a healed place that I had not been in before.
Well, I was just about to ask you about how did writing it change you? I mean, it sounds like it was basically one of the things that you recognized was how much you had changed since your 40s, and that it was more not a journaling because it's a novel, but a reflection of that.
Mm-hmm. I think that for a lot of people, and I know that last time we spoke about grief. People are still so weird about grief. There's so much more talking and shows and podcasts and books and television shows and things about grief now. But there's still this weird idea that, like, if you move on too fast from the death of your partner, for instance, people are watching you and they're judging you and they're making, casting aspersions about how much you really loved it. It's just all weird, weird stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think the older you get and the more more removed you are from the loss, the less you care what other people think about your loss and about how they interpret your loss, because they're not inside your skin. They don't, it's not a good place when you're grieving. They don't want to be there. But I think it changed me in that there were some things, even though they were happening to someone that was fictional, the person has a slight basis in me. So writing about death or writing about these things that happen are still difficult, but also I was pleased with myself at how I was able to turn it into something else, because that meant that I was able to do that, that I was emotionally available.
Yeah.
To do that. And yeah, I was pretty impressed with that.
Well, you should be. You know, it's interesting. I've often had people say to me, it feels as if I let go of too much grief, that I'm betraying, or I'm not following, or I'm abandoning the person that died. And it's a very, I remember one time this woman came into my office and she'd had two children. She lost them in a fire, as well as her grandmother who was looking after them at the time. And she was telling me the story, and it made me feel the way she told the story, like it must have happened a couple of years ago. And much to my amazement, she also looked really good for her age. It was like 15 or 20 years past. And she looked at me, Leslie, and said, how long are you supposed to grieve? And I'm like, how am I supposed to answer that question? There is no set time. And yet you're right. We have either people want you to slow down, you're going too fast, or they want you to hurry up.
Because it, there, my friend Nora McInerney says it's like you get your sad on you.
Yeah.
They don't want you to get your sad on them.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is that whole thing about either they're watching you like a Law and Order episode to make sure that you're grieving properly, or else they think you did it. Or they're like, oh, you're a bummer when you come to parties. I read a thread on, I like following these things on Threads or Blue Sky, where someone will ask a question like, how would you feel about this? Or if this happened to you, kind of the, am I the a-hole kind of thing. But there was a woman who talked about how she had lost a daughter when the daughter was like 6 or 7. And that she had other children, but as those children grew into adulthood, she had basically made, she wanted to make sure that lost daughter was still a part of these things, but she would put a table, like a chair for her at every birthday and that kind of thing. So after a while, one of the daughters who was getting married said, no, you may not leave a seat for her. Mm-hmm. You may not have a special moment of silence. This is about me, my marriage and my adult, also her healing. Mm-hmm. And the mother was very betrayed by this. Mm-hmm. Because she had kept herself in that box. I've never lost a child, so I cannot say
what that's like. Yeah,
what that's like. So I don't even want to think about it. But that she had basically been holding this, the family felt like she was holding them hostage in her grief for all these years.
It's exactly why the woman came to see me, because she had other children who had said, you know, we may have come along after these children did, but you're not there for us. And so that's exactly the reason. And she realized she wasn't, which was much to her credit. So let's take a break and we'll be back in just a moment. The pressure to make the most of the final months of the year is real. There are many who simply wish they could wake up and find out it's January 2026. But our new sponsor, Calm, can more than help you. If you woke up today thinking of all the things you should be doing, please stop shoulding on yourself. You're doing the best you can. When the shoulds pile up, Calm is a tool you can reach for to release stress and find space to breathe, even on the busiest days. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, and it's here to help you feel better. If you're feeling like you could use some support navigating life's ups and downs, get the relief you need with Calm sessions, guided meditations to help you work through anxiety and stress and take better care of your physical health. Sleep stories and meditations and calming music to help you drift off to restful sleep quickly and naturally. Grounding exercises to help you reset and relax when you're feeling overwhelmed, as well as expert-led talks to help you handle grief, improve self-esteem, relationships, and more. Here at Self-Work, we focus on what you can do about it. And using an app like Calm is a very proactive way to help your nervous system and your emotional life take a break so that you're a more rested you. Calm your mind, change your life. Calm has an exclusive offer just for listeners of our show. Get 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/selfwork. This is an amazing value. Go to calm.com/selfwork for 40% off unlimited access. I've been talking about Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth now for a while, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormone levels, with over 50,000 glowing reviews from women worldwide, with 98% of them saying they'd recommend it to friends and family. Now you can take those results even further by pairing it with their prebiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating, reduce sugar cravings, support healthy, sustainable weight management, and boost energy. Because your gut directly affects your hormones, improving gut health can amplify your Hormone Harmony results so that you feel like yourself again. And what's phenomenal? Your gut is constantly sending messages to your brain, so better gut health can mean better mental health overall. Right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and Hormone Harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire first order with the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com, HappyMammoth.com and use SELFWORK for 15% off today. Well, I want to move a little bit into the relationships in the book because I deal a lot with hearing about families and conflict in families and what happened with the character. She, right at this time that she made this mistake as a journalist, and she also fell in love and with someone she was doing a story about, which was a big no-no.
Okay.
And, yeah. And then they just disappeared to LA. And because there's a lot of family conflict. I mean, the name of the book is, I should show the book. I'm bad about forgetting to show the book. There we go. Yay. And so she comes back to bring half of her husband's ashes to his family, and they've had barely any contact for 25 to 30 years. And she has formed her own assumptions about that and why that happened and who likes her, who doesn't like her, all that kind of stuff. And what happens is that the brother actually comes is part of this working out the way it did, as well as it did for her, because he's a lawyer. And I was so struck by I loved the language that you used, the dialogue that you used. I felt as if I was getting to know, my family was nothing like that. I mean, we were, proper and all this stuff. And I loved the dialogue. But it was this interesting, I mean, you could have a fight with somebody and just not like them and scream at them. And then you realize they're on my team, their family. I mean, it really looked at some of the intricacies of, which I loved, of how you tolerate conflict in families. Some do and some don't. This one did.
They did. And I think it's interesting because I had a talk with Zibby Owens, the very important book influencer, about this, about how you make a mistake when you're younger and then it kind of reverberates. But you decide to keep the reverberations to yourself because you don't really care to know how it affects other people. Mm-hmm. And then you are forced to. And so there's a story that you've told yourself, a story that Dawn has told herself, like you said, about who is right, who was wrong, who likes me, who doesn't like me, why. And she has to confront these things. I know that I could not have written hello English, this book any younger than I am now. Because the older you get, the more, first of all, in your personal life, even not just as an artist, but as just a human, there's more space between you and the BS you told yourself when you were younger.
Yeah, really.
And the conversations. And if you are honest about the look back at those things, think.
And how it could have impacted other people.
How it could have impacted other people is that, like, for instance, her sister was a whistleblower on the story that wound up getting stolen from her. And she realizes it's been stolen. She just leaves. And she doesn't think about, are people going to think my sister was involved? Are people going to think that, is it going to be bad for her? And it go, okay, eventually. So she's focusing on the eventually and not the, she's not there between that and that her newsroom that she worked in suddenly is down a reporter because she split and didn't tell anybody. I mean, she does a very selfish thing and she has her reasons, but she makes a very big decision she cannot take back.
Right.
And she's told herself that it's okay. And it wasn't okay.
I do look back. One, I look back at my parents' decisions and actually have more empathy for them. And what I loved about the book too was nobody was, they, the characters weren't good characters and bad characters. they were all very, I don't want to give the book away, but they were all complex characters. And it, even the moment, like you say, when Dawn realized, wait a minute, I've always told myself that there, I couldn't have done anything about the situation. I couldn't have done anything about, you know, what was going on. And so I left. And her sister says, why didn't you stay and fight? Yes, you could have done that. And I love it because she said my gut got sick, you know, realizing that this story that I had told myself the whole time to justify, you know, my actions and to stay away. Really, there was a whole nother way of looking at that, that I didn't pay attention to.
It's interesting. There's a movie, it was based on a Nick Hornby book, and then the movie with John Cusack from the early 2000s, I think, High Fidelity, where this guy who works at a record store who is a jerk does not understand that he's a jerk. And he has this theory that every relationship he's ever had is somehow the woman's fault. So he basically goes back and tries to find all of these women, and he is confused that some of them want nothing to do with him because it seems romantic that you go and you figure it out and either maybe rekindle it or they have explained to you why they did what you think they did to you. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, this is a person, he doesn't think that, okay, this is a person from your past that's coming in and forcing themselves into your life and demanding a resolution for something that happened 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
And so, which is when I decided to stop ever looking up ex people or people I used to have crushes with or whatever on the internet, because they're living their life. If they've been without me for 30 years, they're fine. They're fine. And there's nothing really this person can tell me. And what does it matter why they dumped you?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. So it matters what you did with it.
You know, There were many moments when I thought, this is so nice because I don't have, there's not a, there's surprising things you find out about each character, very surprising things. And so that's delightful as a reader. You know, that's just delightful. What about, I just now want to talk about you personally, if that's okay. Is that okay? What has it been for you to be a single parent? What's it been like for you?
It's kind of like I have a twin sister and I don't have any other siblings. So when people ask me what it's like to be a twin, I don't know how to compare it or quantify it because I've only ever been a twin. I have basically, except for the first year and a half of Brooks's life, have only been a single parent. Mm. Now, I had my mom with us from the time that Scott died into 3 years ago when she got married.
Because don't I believe that y'all were in the process of adopting Brooks when your husband died?
Yep. And then I had fostered
him or something, but then.
Yeah, we were, yeah. He is the birth child of a relative of mine. Okay. And we were identified as possible placement for him when he was 2 days old. She was not able to take him home. And so we were in Florida and they were up here. So because it's two states, we could not immediately take him. So he was placed with another family because no one in my family could take him. He was placed in another family. We visited when he was about 4 weeks old and we came every month. And then he was placed with us as a foster child. We had taken classes to adopt from foster care. Like we were in a whole different section, like kids who would have been older or sibling groups whose parental rights had already been relinquished. Mm-hmm. And so we had to start over. We didn't take all the classes again, thank God, but we had to do a bunch of stuff. And so he was with us and we were edging towards like some things with his parental rights and all that stuff. And then Scott died. And then the third or fourth phone call I made from the emergency room at like 4 a.m. was to my social worker. And I said, this just happened. How do I keep this kid?
Yeah, exactly.
So I had to attend some, you know, hearings by myself. And, you know, we had a whole new plan. It was heartbreaking to have to get a new foster license that didn't have Scott's name on it.
Oh, wow.
You know, terrible. Wow. And so, but we plugged through because I didn't feel like I had a choice. You know, this is my kid now. I had to keep going. So when we moved here in 2020, and my mother got married 2 years later. And so now I really am parenting alone.
Okay.
And it's the most that I can compare it to. My twin has a son who's a year and a half older than Brooks, who's 13, my beautiful Alex. And I see sort of developmentally where I'm going because he's older than Brooks, but I also see like, I don't have a partner, so there's no good cop or bad cop. It's just cop.
Yeah, just cop.
It's just cop. And as we're moving into adolescence, because he'll be 12 this year, it's a really hard stage. And I never know, like some days he's really mad at me and I don't know why. And he doesn't want me to like touch his hair. And then we're in the car the other day in the backseat with my sister's family and he had his head on my shoulder, you know?
Right.
And you have to stop saying anything because they'll think you're weird and stop touching you. But, it is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. The hardest thing.
I got you, sister. I got you.
Parenting
is the most ambiguous thing. It's like you're really caring deeply that this works and how you, there's so many factors you can't control. It's like, wow.
You just have to, one of my best friends was an educator for years and she taught middle school. She taught sixth grade. And now she was in the higher education space for a while. And now she's in the DEI and training space. And every time I call her and she go, how did today go? And I go, well, this happened. And she'll go, but he left the house on time. That's a win.
That's right. That's
he's
right.
Like, he's going to be mad at you sometimes. So he was mad at me yesterday morning. And then he came home and he's like, oh my gosh, here's on my phone. There was a fire and I could see it. And here's it is on my phone. It's like, and so I was like, I will say nothing about this morning because that's just a thing that happened.
Yeah.
Also, she explained to me, and I was only married for 5.5 years. I was with Scott for 6.5 years. And she said, how often did you guys get into disagreements, arguments, knockdown dragouts, or just you're pissing me off today? I go, every other day or so. She goes, yeah. And now this is the primary relationship in your life. So although your brain has developed and his is not, so it's not an equal thing, but yeah, you're going to have issues. It doesn't mean he hates you. It just means that that moment was not a good moment. And you're like, okay, all right.
One of my favorite memories is when Rob was about 12, my son was about 12 and he had a friend. I won't mention the friend's name. The friend was sitting in the back and Rob was sitting to my right. And out of the back came, Miss Rutherford, is it okay to masturbate? And I said, this young man's name, I said, do your parents know that you're asking me that? And he goes, yeah, they said you're a doctor. And so it would be okay to ask you. So
wow.
The next 20 minutes in the car were very interesting because we pulled over. You just never know. You never know if they're going to want to dive into adulthood or what they think is adulthood or whether they're going to want to play some game they played when they were 8. I mean, you just never know.
My kid is 12. Well, none of his friends are listening to this. My kid listens to this music that makes me blush, but also he still watches Bluey.
Yeah.
Like yeah. Comfort show. Like he wants to like be on scooters and wear a gold chain. But then also the other day he was like, he wanted to know where his like lovey was, his bunny lamb, we call.
Right.
So here's bunny lamb. It's like, why are we something? It's like, it's at that weird place and watching him try to figure out who he is. And I'm honored to be this kid's mom. I'm honored to be, I will say this was a challenging summer discipline wise. Mm-hmm. And we spent too much time together, honestly. And when there's only you, you know, we got to make other special plans to have him with someone else who's not with you. The logistics sometimes can be so harrowing. You don't even do it.
You get to play tag. It's like, there are some bitter things. I mean, every parent I've ever worked with has said, well, they do exactly what I want them to do when you're not around. As soon as you're around, there's a problem, you know, meaning to their partner. But, But still, when that's the reality you're living every day, then that's a whole different matter.
It is. Also, I never get to fly first class because I have to buy two tickets. The only time I've flown first class in the last 5 years was a conference I went to without him.
There you go.
And I was like,
"Wah!" Yeah, this is it. So what's next for you? I mean, are you going to write another novel? Do you know?
I have something I'm working on right now. And I can probably talk about soon, but not exactly right mm-hmm. now, but I have another couple ideas I'm working on. I am, you know, continuing to work at the Baltimore Banner. I am doing a memoir class with Poynter Institute online this fall with some other very cool writers. So that's really cool. I'm training for a 10K, and it is harder this year than last year because I had COVID in June, and I can feel that it's a little different, but I'm getting there. There's some days, like yesterday, I started out really fast. I was like, this is going to be great. Then about a mile into it, I'm like, this sucks. Can I go on? Is there a lift that can come get me so I can not have to finish this? And I finished it. It was terrible. But I got through it. And you're going to have terrible runs. And that thing is a metaphor for life. It's like, as long as you get there, you know, as long as you get there, you figure it out later. You do a stretch, you put some ice on it, you'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, I think Cindy Metzler got us together. I think that's who introduced us years ago. And I followed you. I admire what you stand for. I admire what you write about. And it's been great to keep in touch with you. And
you too. I do keep up with your stuff as well. Yesterday I went on going through, you know, your work and getting reacquainted, and just, you have such lovely conversations. And I'm sure people have said this to you before. It's wonderful to talk to people who get it, whatever it is, you know, that you don't have to over explain. It's always a very interesting conversation because you know what you're talking about.
Thank you. And I was sitting around reading your book this weekend, and my husband goes, "You're not, what are you doing? Don't you have things to do?" And I said, "Well, I do have things to do. This is one of them." And I always, you know, I have one time not read the complete book that somebody has had the kindness to send to me. So anyway, I really enjoyed it. You made me laugh. You made me cry. And as a psychologist, let me give you the feedback that your characters are very real. And I like that. So
I appreciate that. And as a journalist, I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to do that kind of character development thing. So I'm very happy to hear.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. Leslie, thank you so very much. I'm president of the Arkansas Psychological Association this year, and we have been hard at work in putting on a fall conference that y'all can either come to in person or virtually. There's one day for the public. It's Thursday, October the 9th, and our speakers will be experts on suicide and suicide prevention, including three people in the afternoon, Dr. Leanne Bennett, and then Chris and Martha Thomas, all of whom have lost loved ones to suicide. Chris and Martha have actually been guests here on the podcast and are eloquent, eloquent speakers about the death of their 24-year-old daughter, Ella. If you'd like to join in for this conversation with Dr. Bennett and the Thomases, I urge you to do so. You can sign up as a member of the public at ARCPA, A-R-P-A, psych, psych.org. That's ARCPAPsych.org. I think it's $40 to come to all the sessions on the 9th. Also, for clinicians, if you're interested in what's on the cusp of suicide prevention, we have a speaker coming in, Dr. John Summers Flanagan, who's also been a guest on this podcast, to talk about what he calls his strengths-based suicide assessment. So if you're a therapist or any kind of clinician, please go to ARPA, A-R-P-A, psych, psych.org, and you can register virtually. Of course, you can come in person if you're anywhere close to Little Rock, Arkansas, but I'd love to have you there. Again, with any questions about it, please email me at askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com. Thank you all for being here. I had a lovely time away in Ireland and Portugal. We had some great guides, Liam O'Shea and Jerry McGow in Ireland. They were wonderful. So if they're listening, hi, guys. And of course, I worked with my team that I worked with last year in Portugal, Claudia and her gang, and they were absolutely wonderful. So again, thank you for being here. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self Work.